RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Breaky Val on the drums and...
Me, Beans, and we've got our very special guest with us today, Zach, who we talked to, oh gosh, it was a couple months ago, right after the Project Veritas story broke about the Google whistleblower in the flesh. He's with us today. Hey, Zach.
Hey, how you doing, Tracy? How you doing, Frank?
Great to have you, man.
Good to be here.
Yeah, super awesome. And we met at the American Priority Conference, spent some time together.
Yeah, we did. Did you see my presentation?
I didn't see your presentation because they had me working my butt off.
Mm-hmm.
So I had probably done like 50 interviews throughout the 3 days I was there, and I sat on a panel and I was just running around. I didn't get to see anything.
Oh my God, you were running all over the place. It was crazy. And I finally caught you for that one lunch. We sat down and we just talked each other's faces off.
I know. That was probably the only lunch I actually ate the entire time.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even text her the couple days she was down there. I didn't even text. I knew I wouldn't even get a response.
Yeah, it was great. It was such a great event. I was like, Tracy, when's the next one of these types of things happening throughout the country? And she's like, no, that's it.
Well, yeah, for this year, there really isn't. I mean, CPAC's in February.
I've never gone to a CPAC. What do you think of those?
They're great, especially now. They're great.
Yeah,
because it's not like, I don't know, Frank, you're not going to go to CPAC this year, are you?
I've never been to CPAC.
I've been to several, and usually they're stuffy, old Republican people. You know what I mean? Like the old guard, right? That's not the case anymore. It's a bunch of younger, fresh blood that's out there, and it's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Good, because we're going to need to get young and agile because, man, oh, man.
Yeah, we sure do.
Oh yeah, everybody's taking the gloves off. So can't be old and slow.
That's the next one that I know of, but they're doing little pop up ones around the country too. Just go to their website and check it out. But you have a couple topics that you wanted to talk to everyone about today. So where do you want to start?
Yeah, well, so I guess the thing that's been really popular with everyone is this concept of where is all of this social credit system coming from? And people around, you know, the country have been getting deplatformed. I actually just got off the phone with Laura Loomer, and she's been deplatformed pretty much off of every site that you can imagine. And yeah,
she's still outraising her opponent.
She's still outraising her opponent. Is that unbelievable or what?
Absolutely amazing.
And so, you know, I mentioned that this is essentially a Chinese-style social credit system being installed, you know, silently in America. And that's just sort of taken off. Breitbart ran a story on that. And then there's been a bunch of follow-ups. I got on the Glenn Beck show. We were talking about, you know, what exactly is this thing that's happening into America? And, you know, this is a Chinese style social credit system. You know, you do something wrong, you don't necessarily have a score that is centralized, but at this point it's like decentralized. You know, someone Googles your name, like let's say HR Googles your name and there's some slander about you. And suddenly you find yourself, in a sit down with HR trying to explain yourself and maybe you get fired. And one of the things that I started to realize as I was digging through a lot of these documents, specifically around Google's authoritativeness score, is essentially that they're implementing the social credit system. You can see it right there in the guidelines that Google is using for its raters. And so what are Google's raters? Google's raters is an army of people that go throughout the website and assign a secret authoritativeness score to every website that they review. The guidelines are open to the public. We can download them and we can see them. And one of the ways that they you know, assign a high authoritativeness score is based upon, now get this, the Wikipedia entry of the topic or person.
Wikipedia, and, you know, the publicly editable. Just listen. I don't know if you know this, Zach, but WikiLeaks has an entire database of internal emails leaked from Wikipedia.
Wow. Tell me about that.
So I read them all. It's a lot of squabbling amongst their little core team. But basically what they're talking about is what they should be able to have the power to change and what they feel like they should be able to change, and how there's one camp that's arguing that the information should be definitely, you know, 100% fact checked, and there should only be certain people. They're just they're squabbling about what's true and what's not, and what should be in there and what shouldn't, and how it should work. This is from years ago, but it's a huge drama filled release about their internal fighting.
Wow. And that's where everybody gets their everything.
I mean, yeah, you can't even, I mean, you know, kids are using Wikipedia in their papers, and, you know, there are even reporters using Wikipedia. And I'll say this, the only time that I use Wikipedia, because I do use it, first of all, it shares a perspective on what the position of the powers that be are. Yeah. Second of all, in there, they have to source their stuff or it gets taken down either way. It really does. So they have sourcing that I probably may not have found before. And those articles are usually full of really good stuff. So that's the only way that I use it. But I'm sorry to interrupt. Continue.
No. I mean, this is great, because this kind of sets the foundation about, you know, is Wikipedia a legitimate source in order to base an authoritative score? That's actually essentially like what I want to talk about today. Is like, you know, Wikipedia, Google's authoritativeness score, you know, is this right for abuse?
How do they do this in real time?
No, they go through periodically, and they may made a, I'm not entirely sure how they modify the scores. It's just that this, it's a 167 page, guide, and I know that they go through and they are assigning the score. So let me just read you a little bit of it. So it's called the Expertise, Authoritativeness, and Trustworthiness, and it's acronymed as EAT. And they say, remember that the first step of page quality rating is to understand the true purpose of the page. Websites or pages without some sort of beneficial purpose, including pages that are creating with no attempt to help users, or pages that potentially spread hate, cause harm, or misinform or deceive users, should receive the lowest rating.
But for they define those words arbitrarily, so there you go.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, and think about all the New York Times articles that have come out that have just been objectively racist. I mean, I remember there was this one article that came out that said, can my black child be, or actually I got it right here. Can my children be friends with white people?
That's not racist. In the world of, you know, Google, that is social justice.
Right. And then
that's the mark of a conscientious thinker.
Right.
Well, I mean, the thing is that, yeah, I mean, I know you guys are joking, but my God, like, you know, you swap that white people out with any other race and it becomes racist and would receive a low authoritativeness score, is pretty much a given, right? Like, you know, can my child be friends with black people? Can my child be friends with, you know, Jews? Like, this would be universally condemned, and rightfully so. But if the target is white people, then you can do whatever you want.
So not only do we have, and Frank, I know you've got something to say here. Not only the problem here is, again, the subjective use of words and how the left and the dark sort of power structure defines words to mean things that they don't really mean in polite society. So their version of hate would be anybody on the right or me or Frank or you. And their version of true is the exact opposite. Right, Frank? Like,
oh, yeah. Well, that's part of the reason why, you know, we were talking about Wikipedia a little bit before and whether or not it could be trusted to be a nice source of information. But it's the same as anything else. I still put on the television from, you know, every blue moon. If something big happens and I want to see live coverage, I can't find a stream of it real quick. Whatever the hell it is. You go into the world, you need to go into the world with a certain skill set now of being able to separate the separate what could be information that's useful to what is just complete nonsense. And also people's opining and giving you a guide to interpret all of the information and the data that might be passed along. You know, it's more often than not, all of these actors and actresses on the television are admitting all of the truth to people, but then they tell you how to see the truth in a different way. So they give you everything that you need, and then they give you the lens through which you see what you need. So as far as the social credit score and Wikipedia goes, it all things apply. Well, with the social credit score, we know that Facebook, very cozy with it. Chinese, very cozy with it. Silicon Valley and China are like married. They're joined at the hip now. But so that doesn't surprise me at all. But the Wikipedia thing, it really is just a matter of what do I need here? What data am I looking for? On the other hand, if you're talking about what's been done to us educationally, there's a lot of people out there just trying to confirm their bias, and there's plenty of that. There's plenty of ways for people to confirm their bias. First of all, fact-checking. All the fact-checking websites are just all leftist nonsense. So if like you want to go
– Snopes.
Well,
oh, yeah, Snopes. Political
however, what? You know, the whole big thing, and Zach, I don't know, you probably have been watching this, when Zuckerberg was just in front of Congress and AOC was going after him, she was going after him because isn't the Daily Caller a fact checker? Weren't they on the list of fact checkers? And everyone was like blown away that they had a right leaning source. You know, the white supremacists over there were doing fact checking.
I'm checking this out right now. Daily Caller fact checking.
I could have sworn that it was that was the big hubbub.
Maybe I don't know. So there's some people that are much better at getting all the available news. I only have a bad addiction, not a crippling addiction to news.
I have a crippling addiction to news.
Yeah, I feel yeah.
Yeah, here we go. Facebook teams with right-wing Daily Caller in fact-checking.
Uh-oh.
And wow. they Yeah, well, I mean, so they had Zuckerberg up there, and that's where that clip from AOC came, where she was like berating Zuckerberg that they could have the gall. And then Zuckerberg was pushing back and saying, hey, listen, we don't choose the fact checkers, trying to take the blame off him. There is an independent agency that comes in and chooses the fact checkers. You can't. And this is the thing, like the left are absolute tyrants. You cannot have anybody that opposes their worldview doing anything. They need to control everything. And it feeds right back into what you guys are talking about. I completely interrupted you. I just wanted to say.
Oh, no. Well, let me just jump in there, too, and say this is at the crux of the reason why social credit scores or anything of that nature, where authority has to be given to any one body of people or one person to make distinct choices and determinations on whether or not a person is being a good citizen. Well, based on what? Based on what worldview? You know, this is the big problem with 95% of government action, to be honest. Based on what?
How do you stop it, Zach?
Well, I think that, you know, the Daily Caller coming on as a fact checker is amazing. And the lefts, because they're well funded, they're going to complain each step of the way. And what's really great about this is that, you know, for the last couple of years, I've been thinking to myself, how come there's no right-wing fact-checkers out there on the internet? And the reason is because they get hounded, and the gatekeepers that, you know, have all the means of, you know, information distribution, have gatekeeped them out of there. And now, for the very first time, it looks like we're going to have the Daily Caller be a fact checker on Facebook, which I think is hilarious because it's like these left wingers are going to start getting fact checked. And now they're going to start accusing the Daily Caller of the same thing that we're accusing Snopes of.
Right, right. But here's the thing. This story goes back a little further than that too, guys, because Zuckerberg was having secret meetings with right-wing conspiracy theorists. That's the way the media, the legacy media framed it. Because he was going around, he was sitting with conservative thought leaders like, I guess, the Tucker Carlsons of the world, who, by the way, don't ever mess with. The man is not afraid to put his foot down and use the courts to get, you know, his justice. So I think that that's a good read, because Tucker Carlson founded Daily Caller. I don't know if you guys know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it goes back, and people freaked out. Like, I was posting about it a lot because I thought it was so scary, the tyrannical bent. And I just hope that Zuckerberg, I think that there's a chance that he sees the Nunes lawsuit against Twitter, and he sees all these lawsuits coming forward against these social media companies, and he realizes if he wants to save his butt, he's got to at least be a little fair. I don't know if that's true. But
I think so. I think Zuckerberg's in hot water, honestly.
They want to kick him off the board of his own company. They've been trying to figure out how to get Zuckerberg off the board of his own company for a long time. Mm. So something's going on. But so it's great that he's a fact checker now, because that'll contribute to the just side of the truth, you know, sort of landscape. But Google's still doing this, and is anybody intervening to try to stop it, especially given what we know about Google's cooperation with China that is supposedly they weren't doing, but are?
Can you talk more about that?
So Google had said that they were in hearings, that they were never under oath because they don't swear these people in. If they don't want to be, but they had said they are not doing business with China. They are not working with China. And then we had a whole bunch of news drips over the past couple months that they actually are secretly working with China.
In what capacity?
Just the working on software. If you guys can take it away for a minute, I'll find some of the articles. I didn't even think to pull them up, but you guys can talk about this a little bit more. I'm not putting you on the spot right now, but
Go ahead.
I was going to say, just tell us what you know about Google and China, Zach, and you and Frank can chat while I pull this stuff up.
Well, I kind of want to stay on this Facebook topic a little bit longer. Frank, have you noticed that there is like an all out like civil war happening right now on Facebook?
I left Facebook 2 months ago.
Oh, you
altogether.
Left.
So what have you noticed in particular? I mean, I left Facebook just because of how antisocial the social network is. And I just didn't want to see people in my life talking about stuff they don't know anymore. So
The same way. I left it like 3 months ago and I was just like, I can't take this place anymore. It's like a
halfway house. And I was over there, and actually I left completely about 2 months ago. And for the 6 months prior to that, or actually maybe about a year and a half prior to that, really barely any posting. I only used it for the Messenger because I had been on it since it launched, since my college was added to the Facebook network in 2005. That's when you needed a .edu web email to get onto it. Mm-hmm. So I've been able to see the decline in just the way that the platform is used and how it correlates to the decline of social cohesiveness and all that stuff. But is there something in particular other than that you have noticed?
Yeah, it seems like I came back a few weeks ago and I was like, wow, there's like a whole civil war going on. I had this leftist friend who had this multi-page rant, and he was complaining about how there's this new group of people that are punching through culture. That, and he said that they all listen to Jordan Peterson. They all think that global warming is a hoax. They're into all these conspiracy theories. What's funding this? What's generating it? Because now it's everywhere. And I, and then him and I ended up getting into an argument about global warming, because I put up a meme, you know, showing that Greta Thunberg, who's a know-nothing 16-year-old, is allowed to talk about climate change, but a very prominent climate alarmism skeptic, who is a climatologist and has published 150 different papers and has been cited thousands of times, doesn't get any traction whatsoever. And so, like, me and him had it out. And I used to be all in the global, you know, warming alarmism camp. So I knew all his arguments, and I knew, like, the arguments of the other side. And so we got into it, and I'm pretty sure, like, I lost two additional friends in the process.
Damn.
Because, you know, people are entrenched in their belief system. And it comes
to life on this. It comes to life on these platforms. Twitter is just as bad. I try to stay away from the comment sections on pretty much anything. If the president tweets or anybody else tweets, I try to stay away from, because the comments, it's just, I want, if you can wring a person's neck through Twitter, I would have killed half the world already. I would have strangled half of the world already. The world population would have dropped from 7 point something billion to about 2 billion already. I wouldn't have a co-host anymore. Yeah, I'd be in jail.
So I found the couple things here that are the problem. So a couple things. Number one, they created a censored search engine called Dragonfly that was being used in China that was supposedly
Google.
Yes, exactly. So Google was supposed to, you know, stop working with China back in 2010, but then this whole Dragonfly thing happened. They also have an AI lab in China. Yep. Where they have several hundred employees that are working there. And one of the generals and a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said that that is indirectly benefiting the Chinese military. And the other thing is, a way that they were getting their software into China to be used is through Huawei. And I don't know if you are familiar with what happened with Huawei, but there is a complete ban on Huawei, and this has to do with Five Eyes. It gets really deep, but you're not supposed to be doing business with Huawei. So Intel and a bunch of other chip makers and phone makers had no problem stopping, but Google is still kind of trying to dip their toe into that water. And there's that.
Yeah. So, you know, who's a really interesting person to research is this woman by the name of Fifi Li. She works at the Stanford, she's like an AI guru, and she created this thing called ImageNet, and I think someone made FaceNet off of it, and it was an image recognition system. She has hundreds of papers on AI. Google hired her to run their cloud division AI project in 2018. And recently she was tapped to open up the Beijing AI Google Lab. And what she said about Google in a blog post, and this is what was really interesting and made everyone's eyebrow raise, is that she said that Google's AI has no boundaries or borders. Now, this is a really big problem, because AI is a double-edged technology. It has military applications.
Mm-hmm.
And if Google is researching this AI in the UK and their AI project has no boundaries, that means that China has access to it. And as the president of China, his name escapes me right now. It's a little early. Something Ping.
We don't have to give him any respect. It's fine.
Yeah. he stated in 2017 that they were starting a civil military fusion such that any civilian opportunities that had a military application would be fused in with the People's Liberation Army. And this has got everyone now really concerned, because if Google has no boundaries on their AI project and anything that lands in China that has a military application needs to be shared with the Chinese military, then that essentially gives the Chinese military access to Google's Manhattan AI project called DeepMind.
Well, what does that do? What does DeepMind do?
So DeepMind is a type of, well, it's a company that was based in the UK. Google bought them up, and I think they bought them up in 2010. And this group of people were able to create the world's best chess player and then the world's best Go player. And Go was noted as just a really difficult game for computer science to master. Chess has really defined moves, and so you can actually create like a really you can create a search tree and iterate through the search tree, finding all possible combinations, let's say five moves ahead. This is something that I've done. But Go has so many positions on the board that it has a combinatorical blow up, such that there are too many, the tree is just too effing large. It's got too many branches upon branches, and so the computer can't brute force and traverse through all the different possibility states. And so it gives up. So it's like, well, we've got to find a different way on how to win this game. And so DeepMind trounced the very best Go player in the world on its first try. And it figured out how to play the game by not with human interaction, but it just created random players and then played them against each other and did this evolution, you know, inside the chip where, you know, it's spawning, creating random players and then playing them. And then the best ones that, you know, are able to beat the others are promoted, and then they kind of like have babies. And then these daughter programs then have random mutations added to them, and then they go again, and then like you pick the best out of that, and then you go again.
So it's like a big bracket tournament, but with all AI trying to figure out every computation possible to beat this game, or at least learn the best ones in any given situation.
Randomized strategy, and then put them in the death cage, right? Get them to fight, pick the winners, keep on this process over and over again. And so, and now here's the thing. I doubt that the programmers that made this system even know how AlphaGo, like the neural network, operates. And this is the problem with AI, is that instead of like line by line, you know, like if this, then do this thing.
Right.
It's a collection of network nodes, you know, in silica.
And so they're living and breathing in a way.
Yeah, they're living and breathing. Like, you know, it's like someone trying to open up the mind and figure out, oh, this is where the soul's at, right? It's the same sort of problem with these neuronets. And the interesting thing about the AlphaGo is that, or actually DeepMind, is they are able to create what's called a transferable AI, transferable neural network. And so what this means is that you create a neural net for, let's say, the game of chess, and it figures out like how to traverse through a tree of possibilities. And then you can take that neural net and you say, well, now I need you to start learning how to play checkers, or I need to, you know, or backgammon.
Anything with that sort of structure of a game.
Yes. And okay. So then it's able to modify the neural net towards this new problem set. And this ability to transfer, you know, or generalization is going to create a new class of AI. Actually, it's already been created. And what this is called is artificial general intelligence. And unlike AI, which is specialized to a particular problem set that it's been trained against, artificial general AI will be able to perform well on novel tasks. And so the fact that this artificial general intelligence is now being shared with the Chinese military, according to public statements made by Google representatives, this is a big existential problem because, you know, as Peter Thiel said, this is the AI Manhattan Project of our time. And it's got a lot of researchers, you know, top paid researchers in the world
concerned.
Working on this problem. Mm. And it's going to be more powerful than the nuclear bomb by far.
Yeah, it's scary to think about. You know, there's forget social credit score and people. This China is evil. They'll do anything to destroy their enemies. This is not a country that cares about human life at all. And, you know, Donald Trump has done his best because their entire existence, Zach, has been created. All of their innovation and technical advancements have been because they've stolen them from other people.
Yep.
They're not, people have this sort of thought that the Chinese are just brilliant people. It's not necessarily that they're brilliant people. They're just really adept at stealing other people's innovation. And it seems like Google is handing it over. Now, we can cut this if you want, but can we talk about what you sent me?
Yeah. What did I send you?
Remember you sent me a special page to look at and research about something particular?
It was like a month ago, right?
Yeah, in regards to energy.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about that if we can.
Let's talk about that. Oh, my God. That's such an interesting story. Do you want to lead or should I?
You lead. Frank, you're gonna love this one. You really okay. are.
I'm ready.
This is going to blow your mind, okay? So let's go to October 1st, 2017. Why is this date notable? Because this was the date of a tragedy of the Las Vegas massacre. And on October 2nd, Google went to a frantic panic. They came out and they said, oh my God, there's all these conspiracy theorists taking advantage and trying to profit off of this shooting. We need to have an emergency code red censorship event. That's my words, not theirs. But and we need to go through and like prevent all this fake news from reaching, you know, the people of the United States and the world. And so, you know, that happened. And what appeared within Google's bug database was a list of websites that were, you know, to be blocked. And they were being blocked at the story level. So what you had is you had some, you know, some stories from CNN and InfoWars and a lot of these stories that were actually talking about ISIS claiming responsibility for the Las Vegas attack. That's an interesting story in itself, but let's not go there. And one of the stories in particular was a website that didn't actually talk about breaking news or current events. They were an energy website, and all they talked about was a type of cold fusion device called an ECAT. And this website strangely found itself in this blacklist. And so what happened was, for some reason, probably because this website had a badly formed URL, had two subdomains, the entire site got knocked off. And I realized this in November because I frequent this website. They talk about Andre Rossi's cold fusion device. And they were complaining, we've been knocked off the Google index. Let's can find us.
Stop even for 1 second. Just explain what cold fusion is in a brief sentence, if you can.
Cold fusion was discovered in 1989 by the Pons Fleischmann. It's a way of generating limitless clean energy without radiation from a type of heavy water called deuterium.
Okay, perfect. Now continue. So okay. The site's down and you figure it out because you go to the website.
I go to the website. They're like, we're knocked off the Google index. And I was like, no way. And like, sure enough, I could type in the exact URL of the website and it wouldn't even pop up at all. And the way that I was able to refine the website is that they had put, they had created a new .org and then mirrored all of their content. So I, you know, at this time I work at YouTube, which is owned by Google. So I've got access to all the Google's network stuff. I go and decide that I'm going to fix this. And so I go and I search and I find out that there's this blacklist for, you know, the Las Vegas shooting. And lo and behold, they're in there talking about, like, you know, Stephen Paddock, da, 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 da. That's like what, like their URL is keyword stuffed with the search terms for, you know, an article that was asserted that they had on their servers.
But they didn't.
They never did. They never even talk about current events at all. So
you're talking about the Cold Fusion site never talked about current events, but they are still blacklisted.
Right. It was done almost purposefully, right? I mean.
Yeah. So I started to sit there and go, wait a minute. If they don't ever talk about any news other than Cold Fusion, then how are they on this Las Vegas massacre blacklist? And it was an interesting question. I started asking myself, I was like, well, what if they were put there like intentionally by a bad actor? Could this be a hack? And I said, if this was a hack, you know, then what would the implications of this be? And what my, or not a hack, let's clarify. Let's say it's sabotage, right? If this is sabotage, then why would a bad actor want to sabotage this website? And I sat down and I said, they would want to sabotage it because Cold Fusion is real, not because it's fake. If it's fake, no one would care. It wouldn't have a threat to anyone. So I'm realizing, well, okay, well, let's say Cold Fusion was real. And at this point, I didn't realize that it was real. I suspected that it might be, and it was entertaining to look at. But I was like, okay, let's say that it was real, and let's say this was taken out. If this was taken out, then that means that it's real. And if it's real, that means that you can't have the carbon tax, and the United States and all the other countries of the world could be sovereign because there wouldn't need to be any oil wars because we would have abundant energy everywhere all the time. And I went, wow. If that's, you know, and I thought about this for several days, and I came to this conclusion. I was like, well, wait a minute. If that's true, then that means that Google is such a large company that they're also going to research it to hedge their bets. But they're not going to want to contradict the narrative of the deep state.
Which is it fails.
Yes. Yeah, so they're going to keep it secret. So I had these two sort of like predictions. And so I said, okay, well, in that case, if I look for a Cold Fusion lab, I'll find it within Google and it will be secret. And I found it.
Oh, yeah, it exists, all right.
It exists. So I found out, and this was before it was disclosed to the public. Now it's disclosed to the public. Everyone knows that this is true. But at the time, Google was running a secret Cold Fusion laboratory.
They were running it. It was theirs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
It was theirs. Yes. And they were keeping it secret. And I ended up talking to the scientists that were involved in this Cold Fusion lab. And they were telling me about like what they were working on. They had some promising things. And they were really excited about it. And so I said, hey, I want to talk to you about this guy that I've been following for a decade now. His name is Andre Rossi, who made the ECAT, which this whole website was based on following Mr. Rossi's invention as it was progressing. Now, keep in mind, Andre Rossi has had, I think, two independent verifications of his machine, and it wasn't running for like a few hours or a day. He had it running for a month, and he published the results of this third-party verification at Cornell University.
We can't leave out either, Zach, that they had tried to work with him, Google.
Yeah, well, that's the next part of the step.
Okay. So, all right, go ahead.
Google uses a ton of energy. So what if I get Andre Rossi, you know, and he's claimed, like in a conversation at this point, that he actually has a working device and he can create megawatts of power. He can scale it up. So I'm like, hey, I'm just going to like talk to Google. Maybe they can, you know, compare notes, or maybe they can invest, or maybe they can, you know, even buy the heat energy off of him to use to power all of their servers. So I get them on a conversation together, and when the meeting starts, there's this new guy that I've never seen, that I haven't talked to before. He's not one of the scientists I've talked to. You know, I have no idea, and I won't say his name. But he comes on and he's just like, "Oh, hi, Zach. How you doing? Hey, I'm like part of this lab. I wanted to talk to you about this." And he's like, "Yeah. So tell me about Andre." I was like, "Well, Andre's really amazing. He's got like, you know, this invention that he's created." And the guy's like, "No, he hasn't. He hasn't made it. It's a hoax." I went, "No, no. He's not only has he made it, but he's tested it with a third-party verification, and he's gotten a patent on it." The guy's like, "No, no, he doesn't have a patent." I'm like, "No, no, he's got a patent. Here's the patent number." The guy's like, "Yeah, but it's not internationalized." I was like, "No, no, it's internationalized. Like, here's the number for the UK. Here's the number for France. Here's the number for like Italy." And he kept on pushing that Andre Rossi didn't have anything. And I thought that was really weird, because as a scientist, you would want to, I don't know, figure this out for yourself. And so, you know, I'm arguing with this guy, and he's trying to tell me that the state of reality isn't what it is. And I'm like, why is this guy pathologically lying to me? Or why is he so dedicated to his version of reality, which isn't reflected by, you know, fact checking? Anyway, so this guy tells me that Andre Rossi is a fraud and that he's had a lot of litigation against him, which is true. He's been to court a bunch of times because the deep state tried to steal his patents by reneging on their agreement. I think it was called Industrial Heat. They told him that they would invest $100 million in Rossi's thing as long as he gave it to a third-party verification to verify that it worked. Andre Rossi did that. Hence the report at Cornell University. But Industrial Heat said, no, that wasn't sufficient to convince us. And so they had inserted this clause saying that if Andre Rossi hadn't been able to prove his machine worked, that they would be able to capture his IP and appropriate it. And so, you know, Andre Rossi fulfilled his part of agreement. Industrial Heat Technologies took his invention, like ignored his findings, ignored the third-party verification, ignored the report that was published, and just acquired the IP. And he sued them and then won. The court agreed with him. Hey, yeah, he fulfilled his obligations. You got to give him either the $100 million or you got to give him his IP back, and he got his IP back. Anyways, so the guy's saying, well, Andre Rossi is litigious, and so that's a high risk for Google. And what was really interesting is that this guy ended up knowing a whole bunch of information about Andre Rossi, but had all the facts wrong. And so I leave this like meeting, and I'm like, who is this guy? You know, and I research him online, and I found out that he's like one of these royal bloodlines. He's got like a family crest. And I'm like, oh, okay, I think I got what's going on here.
And
Google, what?
Is this the train?
The train?
Yeah.
What do you mean
the train? His father invented the locomotive, or his grandfather.
Whoa, I did not know that.
Yes.
You want to take it away? What? Tell me more.
No, I mean, I just did research into this person that we're referencing, and I found out a lot of interesting stuff. I went back, you know, he's very young. I went back a decade or so, and I found that his family is very, like you're saying, and invented the steam locomotive.
Wow.
They're an energy family.
They're an energy family. And Jordan Sather also said that this individual was involved with he had connections to the CIA, and he was mentored by, I think, the same guy that mentored Tom DeLonge or something. And so it's like spooky. So like my spider senses for spookiness like were tingling, and I was able to verify that, yeah, this guy had the appearance of being part of the cabal. And so I'm like, well, wait a minute. So there's this cabal member embedded in this free energy lab at Google. And so I called back Andre Rossi, and Andre Rossi's like, oh man, how'd your talk with Google go? Like, are they wanting to like invest in this? And I said, I don't know, Andre. I think there's a guy from the Illuminati who's running the department. I don't know if they're going to be there to help you or whether to sabotage you because you're threatening the global energy supply scarcity model. And then he was like, and Andre Rossi like totally understood. He's like, okay, got it. Thank you for letting me know. And then about half a year later, the same guy like called me back, and he's like, hey Zach, I just want to talk to you. Give me a call. I give him a call, and he's like, hey man, hey, how's it going? And he's like, oh, just in my life. And he's like, hey man, have you been talking to Allah recently? And like, I was like, no, I haven't really been talking to Andre. Yeah, you told me a bunch of things, and so I got kind of spooked out. So I haven't been like talking to him anymore. And that was pretty much, you know, the end of it. What I heard when I disclosed now this project, you know, as part of my disclosure through Project Veritas, I didn't explicitly come out and talk about the free energy. I let it for all you people in the community to sort of like discover, and leaving some breadcrumbs to help push you towards that direction. So this is like coming out now that Google's been, you know, hiding this free energy project. And when the story came out, I forwarded it to Andre Rossi. I was like, hey, Andre, what do you think? Hoping that he would like share this out or like use it. And he had a really short text response. It was like two words. And those words were no comment. Mm. And so I'm starting to wonder whether he's actually working with Google now to do the energy. And that was the reason why this guy was giving me a call back, is to work with him. And if he does, I'm really happy for him. I think that this technology should be used in whatever capacity.
Well, that's the thing. Okay. So first of all, the question is why? Why does Google have a cold fusion lab? They're a search engine.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the first question. The second question is, do they have the cold fusion lab to stifle the widespread use of this technology? Are they doing it by design to keep it to themselves? Because as you know, they'll patent the heck out of it. Or are they using it for revenue purposes? And it's so multifaceted. And there were a lot of like, I found like all these obscure forums of people talking about cold fusion and energy. And I had to read through all of this stuff. And at the end of it, I read through everything and I was like, there's an argument here that it seems like Google is kind of on the fence here. At one point, they're saying it doesn't exist and it can't work. And in another point, they're saying, wow, this was really promising. And then you've got scholars going back and forth with one another, arguing about Rossi's machine and if it works. But there's video on YouTube, your former company, of this machine in action.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got like a heat scope or infrared camera, and it's just hot as blaze, like in the capsule where the nuclear material is being housed. And I've looked at the science behind it because I'm kind of a science guy, and the science and the engineering seems to really check out. And the principle is this. So we all know how hot fusion works. You take hydrogen, and then you get it so hot that it starts banging into each other and overcomes the electric repulsion, and then the nuclei fuse. Okay. That's essentially how it works. Well, you know, you have to get that really hot in order for them to fuse, which means that all your equipment is needs to be made, you know, out of exotic materials because it has a tendency to melt, you know, with a million degree plasma, you know, thing going through the coil. And in the case of a tokamak reactor, well, with this cold fusion, what they've done is that they found out that palladium, which is really, it's kind of a porous material when it like crystallizes, and it can take in water, and it can take in this heavy water called deuterium, and the deuterium gets trapped inside of these pores. Well, when you put an electrical current through palladium, it starts to oscillate in the same way that a quartz watch will oscillate and keep time on a digital watch. That's called the piezoelectric effect. And so the palladium starts to vibrate and all the little like areas inside start banging together like a piston. And so these deuterium atoms get inside of these pistons and that mechanically presses them together and bam, you've got fusion. And it's simple, it's small, and it's really energy efficient, surprisingly. I actually did a video for Andre Rossi taking one of his three-hour public demonstrations and condensing it into 10 minutes. And he had been able to shrink it down to the size of a stack of dimes. And he was able to flip it on with a switch and turn it off. And I think his coefficient of production, which is basically how much energy do you put in versus how much energy that you get out, was on the order of 100x. So let's say you ran 1 watt of electricity through this device, it would output 100 watts of heat, which is amazing. Your car engine doesn't even get something that good.
It's earth-changing, literally.
It's earth-changing. And so once I realized like how earth-changing this was, I was like, wait a minute. So this really simple device can be created and it can generate heat and it can generate – I mean, this thing is so – it produces energy so cheaply that it would be economical to generate gasoline.
And it's clean, too.
It's clean, too. I mean, you could pull carbon dioxide out of the air and form gasoline. Now you're using gasoline as a battery, and you'd be carbon neutral.
I don't know if you're soaking all this in, Frank. I kind of blew my mind. I'm a little bit of a geek myself. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just listening to it all.
Yeah.
And the fact that this was all hidden away with other search terms and websites that were deemed to be scary. I mean, you know, and of course, among that was pages and pages of search terms about Las Vegas. So I don't. It's just odd. Was this censored? And was this censored in search terms around the same at the same time as the Las Vegas terms, or did you just stumble upon this while you were noticing everything else in this blacklist?
Based upon what I've seen with the Google blacklist, I believe that ecatworld.com went down on October 2nd, 2017.
So it's all the same. It's all the same time.
Yeah, it's all the same time. And think about what the planning for that was. So someone, we don't know who, put this website as a to-do to take it off the Google index. They waited patiently, and then an opportunity presented itself for a censorship event.
What is – okay, so let's just talk about it from devil's advocate perspective. What is the upside? Like how trafficked is this website, and what is it providing that is so dangerous that Google would want to shut it down?
So the funny thing is it's not even that trafficked. It's not even that big of a website as far as I can see. And all it does is publish articles about the latest updates for Andre Rossi's ECAT machine. And now it's expanded to cover other people's progress in the cold fusion space.
So here's what I tried to do, and I wasn't successful. Not for lack of trying. I just think that it's hard to find this stuff. I searched everywhere for bids that were going on at that time, trying to see if there was some sort of financial tie. Like if they were fine this or whatever, then Google's tech they were working on wouldn't be as attractive as his. And if they were bidding on the same project or if they were working for the same grant or whatever. And I came up empty. That doesn't mean that one doesn't exist. It just means that my head, it could only take so much of this. I spent a solid, I would say 24 to 36 hours on this.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I did a lot of research on this and I didn't ultimately put a story out on it because I was kind of waiting for this moment. So I'm glad that we got it out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, think about that. Like, you know, so I've been able to sum up how I view this, like at the high level, what's going on? Like, what are the social engineers doing? Like, what's their game plan? And it comes down to ancient Egypt. Okay. Now here's the connection. Why were the pharaohs so powerful in ancient Egypt? Well, they were powerful because they had a monopoly on the water. And if you were downstream of their, you know, gatekeeped water supply and you built a cistern, then that was punishable by death. Because why are you trying to, you know, why are you trying to save up water? You get your water from us. If you're saving up your water, then that means that you can oppose Egyptian rule. Because you can wait it out. You can, like, you know, they want you.
It was their ammunition of today.
Their ammunition. And they want to cut off that water and they want you dead in 3 days. And they want to hold that over you at all times. And so what I realized is that, well, if you have a monopoly on water, then what you want to do is you want to create a desert everywhere else. And this is what I think is happening right now with energy. Is that there was a global supply. It was locked into Saudi Arabia. And when the United States got uppity in the 70s, we got a fuel shortage. And it's never made sense to me about why America never, you know, developed its domestic oil production.
Well, we did now.
We did now. And that's when I realized that I started realizing, because my friend was actually in the protests against the pipeline, and against my advice, because I told him that he was going to discover what protests were really about, which is basically power plays between powerful, you know, billionaires. Mm-hmm. He found that out himself, but it was an important lesson. I'm glad he Standing Rock. That's what it was called, Standing Rock.
Well, Zach, you know, you should read something. I know that this is the author is some people have different opinions of him, but I would suggest you read this short book called The Energy Non-Crisis by Lindsay Williams. And he talks about his time up in Alaska on the North Slope of Alaska in the 1970s and how there was more than enough oil for hundreds of years that was being deliberately stifled by the U.S. government, probably around the same time that people like Henry Kissinger were helping us create the petrodollar. This was because around that 1970s area, that's right around the time that our debt started spiraling out of control. So the theory goes that we cut this deal with the Saudis. So pretty much we will buy exclusively from you if you take some of the profits and reinvest it into buying American treasury notes to try to buy back some of our debt to stabilize what the hell was going on. So pretty much created the petrodollar. At the same time, you can't make that deal if you have an unlimited supply of energy at home, just off of Plum Island or the North Slope of Alaska alone. So there's a couple of different ideas that you might want to consider as far as what happened with that energy crisis in the 1970s. It, you know, like I said, people have different opinions about the validity of Lindsey Williams and his time as a chaplain up there by the drilling sites. But it might be interesting to consider. It might bring you somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite interesting. Like I've heard various versions of that story about how, you know, they cut off our own domestic production in order for have this petro for treasury swap.
Well, hey, listen,
a reserve currency.
It's just a past generation's version of everything that you're pretty much describing here today. The stifling of technology that would cure all energy problems as if they were a crisis to begin with. You know, these are all managed things. That's why people surmise that the next oil is going to be water. You know, once we finally find a way to transition away from oil or whatever the hell the new chapter of this story is, that it's really going to come down to who controls the water supply. And that was actually the basis of the plot from that second the second Daniel Craig Bond film, Quantum of Solace, where they find all the, you know, primary water, the underground water supplies. So it's always about managing resources and creating the idea that there is scarcity. And
yes.
So this is, I think it falls right in line with what you were talking about today with the cold fusion.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a monopoly on water, you want to make everywhere else a desert. And you could be like, well, what does that, you know, correspond to? Well, that can correspond to energy. That can correspond to water. That can correspond to health. You know, all these different things that I now see in the economy are basically forced scarcity in every direction. And I start to ask myself, well, why are they trying to, why don't they just, you know, go for an abundance model? And what I realized is that, you know, it's kind of like AI. AI gets hyper-specialized for a niche. And the people that are in control of the world, I believe, have specialized their niche. All their tactics, all the rule books are all based upon a model of scarcity. And as far as a model of abundance, they don't have a playbook on that. They don't know how to control society. If everyone has abundant food, abundant energy, abundant love, abundant free time to pursue, you know, and prosper according to their own desires. How do you control people that have everything? They're like, hey, we need to collectivize and under one world government. And everyone's like, nah, I'm fine. Right? Like, that doesn't work. You have to be traumatized. We need to collectivize or we're going to get destroyed, or the white supremacists are going to kill all the gays, or you know, they have to create this conflict in order to convince us to collectivize under their system of control. And so
this was the fastest hour ever. We're a little over now, so I have to stop. And I think that's a great place to stop. You need to come back again so we can get into more of these little tidbits that are in the Google cobweb filled closets.
Yeah. Of my mind and yours and everyone else's. So, we got to bring this to the surface, guys, because there's like a new world ahead of us.
And it's a good one. Where can people find you if they want to keep an eye on what you're doing?
They can find me on Twitter under the name Perpetual Maniac. Or you can type in Zach Voorhees and that will find me as well.
Awesome. Hey, Frank.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think it's a good one.
Awesome.
I think this was a good one.
You guys have been listening to the Dark Delight podcast with me, Beans, and...
and Frankie Val on the drums.
And our friend Zach. You can listen to us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, iHeartRadio, or radioinfluence.com. We will see you on Friday.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.